And welcome back, everybody. We continue right here on the Big Talker 1700. Welcoming in the longtime voice of the Iowa State Cyclones, John Walters is our guest. John, let's, and hello to you. Let's start first, though, with what we saw last night and the loss. And it just seemed to me that they were out of sync, meaning Iowa State, and they kind of played a little better in short stretches, but never really could get over the hump.
I agree with that. I think they were definitely out of sync, and I think part of that is just, again, you're playing a completely different starting lineup again. You've got guys playing significant minutes that weren't playing significant minutes 2 weeks ago, and there's just some getting used to each other that takes a little while when you're out on the floor together and you develop a chemistry. It's kind of like an offensive line in football where when they're together over the course of a season, you see a lot of growth. But with Iowa State, it's been such a mix and match and Band-Aids here and there to try to get the lineup on the floor. And when you don't have Solomon Young out there or you don't have Nick Weiler-Babb out there, it really changes the way you play in a lot of ways. And so, I think Coach Prohm's doing the best he can under the circumstances with trying to find that chemistry, but it's really hard to do this late in the season with different guys, and I think that's a big part of it. But you're right, it was there in spurts, and Iowa State looked really good at times, but they just couldn't sustain it, and they just struggled defensively to get stops. And then offensively, they stopped making shots other than, you know, occasional threes in the second half. They shot the three really well, but couldn't make any twos, and their shooting percentage wasn't very good, and the lead got away, and then, you know, they got it close again, and again it got away. So, it's kind of been the story of their season. When you look at a lot of the games, poor ends to the first half and poor starts to the second half have really done them in many, many times, and that was the case again last night.
John, the season came into the year knowing it wasn't going to be the deepest of teams, and that certainly has played out. You add in the injuries that have happened to this squad, it really is decimated. And listening to Coach Prohm's comments after the game last night, he was talking about, you know, when they're going through practice and they're doing 2-on-2 and 3-on-3 and 4-on-4, and that's all, because they can't do 5-on-5. It's just, it's got to be so difficult. And this has had to be a taxing season for Coach Prohm, just not having a full complement of a roster.
Well, and that's a really good point that probably doesn't get brought up often enough. You look at the game itself and, you know, you think, oh, well, they only had 7 guys available tonight, or they only had 8 guys in this game or 6 guys in that game. But when you stop to think about where do you really improve, it's day-to-day in practice. And when you're not able to go 5-on-5 in practice for a long, long stretch of time, or even when you are, it's with guys that are dinged up or not able to go at full speed, you're so cautious, you know, as a coach to limit practice time and limit those moments when you are 5-on-5, because you don't want to get everybody else hurt. And it just kind of snowballs into something that is really tough to deal with. And it's very hard to grow as a basketball team, particularly, you know, it'd be totally different if you had Nazmi Trulong back in his 5th year, or Monte Morris in his 4th year, and Matt Thomas and Deontay Burton and those guys. You know, if they weren't able to practice late in the season, big deal. You know, I mean, those guys know what they're doing. They know their roles. Nothing was really going to change with the practice here or there. But with these guys, as young as they are and as inexperienced as they are, I mean, you think about going into the West Virginia game, that not one of the guys that played in that game played at West Virginia a year ago for Iowa State. Not one. And, I mean, that's tough for all those new guys to go into that environment. And that's that kind of stuff just kind of snowballs. It does become very, very difficult. And I'll give these guys credit. They've continued to battle. I don't think Iowa State has quit. You haven't seen that in games. Yes, there's been games where they have not been able to hit the broadside of a barn and games have gotten away from them. But for the most part, you haven't sat there and thought, these guys have given up. I mean, I haven't felt that at all. At the same time, it is frustrating when you lose a bunch in a row. And right now, Iowa State's lost 5 straight, and that is a slippery slope, and it's hard to get your grip and get that traction again to get going again in a positive direction. Hopefully, Iowa State can find a way to do that in Oklahoma and then take that momentum with them into the Big 12 tournament.
Let me just follow up, John, because you're amongst the Iowa State masses constantly. How has the fan base handled it? You always have reasonable fans who get it and understand what was going on this year. And then you have the lunatic fringe that is, like, off the wall. In your estimation, has the fan base really, are they playing ball here? Are they figuring it out or not really yet?
Yeah, I think they understand. I think it's a knowledgeable fan base. And when you look at 14,000 plus in the arena last night, that's just off the charts unbelievable. Where else would that happen? And, you know, even after the loss, a lot of those fans stuck around and were able to watch the senior night festivities and give Donovan Jackson and those guys standing ovations. And it just meant an awful lot to Coach Prohm. And he even mentioned that after the game, he wants those guys to realize how important basketball is to these fans. And that's a lot of responsibility that they need to carry into the off season to get better. And I think most of the fans do get it. You know, you get spoiled. Iowa State's been to six straight NCAA tournaments. They've had a bunch of veteran guys on those teams. And, you know, if you look at the teams that are having success this year, a good number of them in the Big 12, Kansas State, TCU, Texas Tech, even West Virginia, guys that have kind of stuck together, been together for many, many years, and then, you know, you have a payoff. Go look at the top 15 scores in the Big 12 conference in Big 12 games. Almost all of them are seniors. 10 of them, I believe, are seniors. The five that are not seniors, one is Trey Young, two Kansas State guys, Dwayne Wade and Barry Brown, and the two Iowa State freshmen, Cameron Lard and Lindell Wigginton. So, you know, hopefully some of that starts working in Iowa State's favor next year. And I think most fans understand that this is a blip on the radar. It's not probably a downward trend with the program. I certainly don't feel that way. But it is something that most every program does go through at some point. Even the very best ones usually do this. Obviously, Kansas hasn't in the last decade and a half. But you look at, I mean, even Duke's had a year or two where they've been really down. But for the most part, the Dukes, the North Carolinas, the Kentuckys, the Kansases, the world can avoid having too many dips. But for most everybody else, it's pretty much the way it works. And then you hope that you get one of those years where you get a group of veteran guys that have been together for a couple of years, and you can really reap the rewards of that. And I think that's what's happening for, you know, Texas Tech, K-State, TCU, some of the lead teams around the conference right now.
The future. A lot of excitement certainly about next year. We've talked about it a lot certainly here as well. John, the freshmen, though, four guys coming in. You know, it's early. They're not even on campus. We won't get to see these guys until the summer. But who's the guy that you think's creating the most buzz? The one that you're excited to see all of them, but the one that's at the top of your list?
Well, it's hard to say because, you know, honestly, I haven't seen any of them play other than a highlight clip here and there, and it's hard to draw a lot of conclusions. Now, the guy that's getting the most attention, the most hype, and his team is having a great, great season is Simeon High School's Talen Horton Tucker, who, you know, even when Coach Prohm got his signature, you know, he said this is a guy that if Kansas got him, you'd say, hey, that's a good get for them. If Kentucky got him, you'd say that's a good get for them. So he did kind of put him in a little bit different category than most. So I think Talen Horton Tucker would be at the top of the list. But, you know, Zion Griffin playing at Hinsdale South, I've watched to him, I've been very, very excited about. Really quick first step, left-handers, got a little bit of that Deontay Burton in him. And if he has that kind of explosiveness and quick first step and the ability to shoot the basketball, he could really add a lot in the next year or two. And then think about Tyrese Haliburton. He's a point guard, but in a 6'4 frame, so maybe a little bit of a Deontay Garrett type, but very long, athletic, and can get in passing lanes and really be a nuisance, I think, defensively. And George Condit's probably more of a project, tall, rangy, but he's probably more of a guy that you look for results on the floor in years 2, 3, and 4, not so much in year 1 when you consider that you're going to have Solomon Young, Cameron Lard, and Michael Jacobson, the transfer from Nebraska, all on the roster next year. There won't be as big of a need for George Condit to have an immediate contribution. But I think all those guys, they're really, really excited about. It's their top class. And, I think they feel like they've got some real, real good ones in that class. It's four guys they targeted and went out and got. I mean, it wasn't like these were the second and third choices. These were guys they went after, and these were guys they got. And so that doesn't happen too often in recruiting.
John Walters, the longtime voice of Iowa State, is our guest on the Big Talker 1700. John, it is my contention that next season, with the addition of Shayok and Jacobson, and with what is returning for Iowa State, it will immediately improve this team and put them on the doorstep of an NCAA berth opportunity. Have you seen much of Shayok and Jacobson just in any workouts at all? And what can you talk about those two guys?
Well, I agree with your thought. I mean, these guys are still going to all have to learn how to play together, and there's going to be a little bit of a process there to get to that point. But the end goal certainly would be that Iowa State could get back to the NCAA tournament a year from now. And I do think that's possible. Shayok is a guy who played at Virginia. So he's a good defensive player. He's got all that ingrained in him from Tony Bennett's system. But he wanted to flourish a little bit more offensively. He's going to get that opportunity in Iowa State's system. At about 6'5", very athletic, long, can get up and off the floor. You know, really has a lot of dimensions to his game that he brings to this team, and the ability to shoot the basketball as well. And so he's a guy, as Coach Prohm's described him, the shot clock's winding down. You don't have to run a play for him to get a shot. He can get a shot pretty much any time. And so that's certainly going to be something that will add a lot. And I think he'll bring a lot of leadership to the team as well, being a guy that's played in Virginia's program, successful, older guy. I think he will bring a ton of quiet leadership to that team a year from now. And then Jacobson, big, thick body, you know, and can really shoot the basketball too, but relentless offensive rebounder. You know, I hope he can do some of the things for Iowa State that we saw Mitchell Solomon do for Oklahoma State last night, in just being relentless on the boards and going after it and challenging shots in the paint. But I think he can do a few more things even than Solomon, and that he's got range on his jump shot. He can go out and shoot the three. And he can bring some things to the table for this team that they probably would have had from Hans Brace this year if Hans was able to be healthy. I think he could have brought those things to the table for Iowa State a little bit, but I'm pretty confident that Michael Jacobson will be able to bring those things for Iowa State next year.
After Friday night, it will be Kansas City, John, and well, we know the way that people traveled in the past. It will be a little bit different, I'm sure, this season, but if they get on a little bit of a run, they get into win a couple of games, get to the semifinals, you know a lot of people are going to be packing up the car and heading to KC, right?
Yes, no question. And I think what's happened in recent years, people have gone down there. Now, Iowa State hasn't played till Thursday, so you've seen a lot of people on Thursday. And then if Iowa State wins that game, you've seen a ton of people on Friday. And if they win that one, then Saturday is just a madhouse. So it goes a different level each day. And obviously, starting a little bit earlier this time, playing on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock, you're probably not going to see quite the number of Iowa State fans. It'll still be very well represented, but you know, if they were to win that one Wednesday night, then I think you'll see quite a few people that will make their way down there on Thursday as well. So, you know, you're exactly right. If Iowa State can get through a couple of games, then all of a sudden Friday night would be an absolute zoo again, and that's when it's really, really fun. But early in the week, probably a little quieter as it goes on. Hopefully it picks up.
John, I'm real curious then about what happens after the season is completed. Not going to be playing in any tournaments. I know guys have to get mended and get their heads right, but what takes place then with the guys that will be returning, and do they, can they, because I'm sketchy on some of the rules, can they have an organized workout like, you know, at any time they want to in the gym? Does a coach have to be there, or a coach cannot be there? How does that work in the off season?
Well, you're sketchy on it, and I don't care about it.
Okay.
I don't know how they do it, honestly, Jim. I don't know how it works. I'm sure they're whatever it is, they follow it, but it's those guys will get together. You know, the players have to take ownership in those situations to basically get at the crux, I guess, of what you're saying is there has to be a player accountability and a player ownership to, hey, we're not going to let this happen again next year. So it's on them, you know, to get themselves in the gym and get extra shots. And I think when you look at the culture of Iowa State's program through the years and where they've been, It's the George Niangs, it's the Nazmeet Trulungs, it's the Monte Morrises that just spent a ton of time in the gym. Matt Thomas, you could not drag him out of the gym. Those guys, by doing that, by having that work ethic, other guys kind of want to follow along. And I think that's what we need to see in the off season from these guys. And I think one of the things that will help that is to have the real life George Niang and Nazmeet Trulung and Monte Morris come back to Ames, which I'm sure they will do throughout the summer at times, to kind of ingrain a little bit of their knowledge on these guys and help them along to understand what it takes to be successful at this level. I know Coach Brohm's really looking forward to it. In fact, I think he might even be trying to organize something with those guys for a certain week in July to get them back where they can really have an impact on these returning guys and make them understand what it takes to go to that next level. That's going to be a really big part of it. And, you know, obviously there's going to be a lot more competition for playing time next year. Nobody's guaranteed anything. You look at what's going to be back next year. You're going to have Solomon Young back. You're going to have Zoran Talley back. You're going to have Cameron Lard and Lindell Wigginton back. You could have Nick Weiler Babb back and Jacoby Long and Terrence Lewis, who's really come on of late. And then you start adding all those newcomers we just talked about, including the two guys that have been sitting. And all of a sudden, you know, there's a pretty healthy competition for minutes. And so I will see what happens with this group of guys and how hard they want to work at it and who's going to really fight to be the guys in that starting five and or in that rotation of probably no more than eight guys that Coach Prohm will go. It's going to be way, way more competitive in practice. And I'm looking forward to that. I think that'll help a lot in the progression of these guys a year from now.
Last thing, John, over on the football side of things and became official over the weekend, Tom Manning making the move to the NFL. John, I think you know in our conversations, a lot of respect here for Tom Manning, what he did with that offensive line and just offensively for the program. It's a hit. There's no doubt about it. Any insight into what's going to be next there at offensive coordinator?
I'm not sure on that part of it, and I'm not even really sure on the offensive line coach part of it, although Coach Campbell has kind of hinted that Jeff Myers, who's been a grad assistant under Tom Manning's tutelage for the last couple of years and played for Coach Manning and Coach Campbell at Toledo, would probably be a real strong candidate to be the offensive line coach. That would be fairly seamless. He's already been working with those guys. He's very well liked by those guys in that room. He's a no-nonsense guy. And I think that would be a good transition if he took it over. But then you've got to think about the coordinator, and he's probably not at a stage yet in his career where you'd hire him to do both, if that is indeed the choice. So you look at some guys within that offensive room already. Certainly, you know, Coach Haycock is a veteran guy on the defensive side of the ball. I think you'd have something maybe similar to that with Jim Hoffer, who's already the passing game coordinator, if he was to move into the play calling responsibility. You've also got Brian Gasser, who's an excellent young mind on the offensive side of the ball, the receivers coach. There's good options. Alex Golish, the tight ends coach, would make some sense as well. He's been with Coach Campbell for a long time. So I think there's options within the room. And you never know, maybe he'll go outside that room and bring in somebody from the outside as well. So we'll see where it all goes. But I think one thing about Coach Campbell, he, first of all, is extremely excited for Tom that he's getting this opportunity. And none of this really is probably catching him totally by surprise. I think he's so close with the guys on that coaching staff. He has a pretty good idea of what their career goals are and what they want to do. And I doubt that he was caught off guard by this whole deal, and he probably has a pretty good plan in place to get it taken care of.
Thank you, John. It's always good, pal, when we catch up with you. You have a great day.
Yep, sounds good, guys. Thanks for having me.
There you go, John Walters, longtime voice, Iowa State, the latest on the Cyclones. Always good when we have a chance to catch up with John, Trent.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting. Two teams really limping their way to the finish line on Friday night with Oklahoma and Iowa State. And Jimmy B, you know my love of Tom Manning. I'm so impressed with what that guy did. And we haven't touched on it much this week, but that's a big blow for Iowa State. It really is.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you on that. Listen, he worked miracles. I mean, if there's a miracle worker in sports, Tom Manning should be the poster child for that phrase with what he did with that Iowa State offensive line. and it gave the quarterbacks a chance. It gave Iowa State a chance to win each and every game. And that's one of the reasons, Trent, why they had a winning record plus a bowl victory as well.
We'll take the timeout back on the other side with more Jimmy B and TC. We're going to shift our attention next over to some football. Sean Tomlinson from Bleacher Report coming up on the other side. It's Jimmy B and TC. We'll take you up until 6 o'clock tonight. Back at it, Jimmy B and TC here, 1700 KBGG. Well, we've been talking a lot of college basketball. It is that time of year, no doubt. But there are other things going on. And joining us right now to help us with those other things, talking NFL, it's Bleacher Report's Sean Tomlinson on the phone line today. Sean, what's happening?
Not too much. Just getting ready, as always, for the NFL Combine. It's a time of the year when us normal humans, like, I think I'm kind of fit, but the NFL players make me feel very unfit.
Yes.
When I see a 300-pound lineman running the 40-yard dash in, like, 5.5 seconds. You know, it's kind of funny to watch, but then you look at the clock and you're like, wow.
It's different. And, it makes you feel bad about yourself when you're seeing those behemoths move like that. Well, we're going to talk a little combine with you. I mean, all right, a guy's got 31-inch arms. Okay, who cares, you know? We really want to get into some nuts and bolts here. And the biggest story, obviously, is what's going to happen at the quarterback position across the league. A lot of moving parts. And the biggest of those is Kirk Cousins. Minnesota with an opening, Denver, two teams with very good defenses. The Jets maybe have a ton of money to spend. A lot of different avenues this can go. Even Arizona perhaps could be in the mix. What's the latest on Cousins, what you're hearing? And if you had the ear of Kirk Cousins, what direction would you tell him to go?
Yeah, those are two very, very different questions. I mean, I guess if I had the privilege of that conversation, yeah, I would tell him to go to the Vikings for the simple and obvious reason that, the Vikings, that loss in the NFC Championship stings, but I imagine that sting is wearing off a bit now, and that team and that fan base can look back at a great season when you're 1-1 away from playing for a championship. And, you know, as great of a year as Casey Keenum had, you could say that's maybe the one area where if we really kicked it up a gear, then we feel like great contenders. And it's a team bringing back pretty much the core of that team next year in 2018. Now, the other side of that from the Vikings' perspective, though, is that as tempting as it is to spend a lot on a Kirk Cousins, and it looks like they're clearing, you know, they're really clearing the deck for him, in 2018, everybody's coming back. In 2019, you got to think long-term a bit. You know, you got to those bills come due, so to speak, right? Stephon Diggs, he's going to be a free agent. Danielle Hunter, Eric Kendricks as well. So there is some money you have to spread around, and do you want Kirk Cousins taking up $30 million in cap space when, on the other side of that coin, you just almost made a Super Bowl with Casey Keenum? So that's tough. And then I do think the Jets have so much financial muscle to throw around. No matter what anybody else does, they can sit there and do some very creative and aggressive things with the salary cap and offer him $60 million in the first 2 years and still be able to address other areas. So I think they'll be the major players. The Broncos obviously will be in a big way too, but they need to clear up some space. It wouldn't surprise me to see them cut Aqib Talib. I do think it's going to eventually come down to the Vikings and Jets, and it just depends if you know, Kirk Cousins, what he wants more, the opportunity to win immediately. Yeah, obviously he wants that. But if at some point you're human, and that money sounds pretty nice too.
Sean Tomlinson is our guest. We're talking National Football League. Okay, you mentioned the Combine. Let's go quarterbacks at the Combine, where Sam Darnold of USC now has come out and stated he's not going to throw at the Combine. Other quarterbacks, however, have come out and said they will throw. Does it really make any difference if they throw at the Combine or if they just throw on their pro day?
It sure makes a difference for them. I mean, if you're a quarterback and you know that in that magnified environment, the slightest a throw that's off just a touch, or worse, a throw that's on and it's dropped, you know, that really you know, gets highlighted. Don't you want to be working with receivers at USC in this case, that you've spent your whole career with, that you have chemistry with, that you're familiar with? at the combine. Listen, they're still talented receivers, but they're guys that they haven't thrown to at all. So I don't really see a difference as far as the talent of evaluators. You want to be able to have an atmosphere that you're comfortable with. I think for other guys further down the pecking order, so to speak, perhaps it's a risk worth taking. You know, it's when you go back and look at the recent history of guys who haven't thrown, it's sort of a mix. Robert Griffin III didn't throw at the combine. We all know what happened there. He had one great season and a few awful seasons. And Derek Carr also didn't throw at the combine, and he's made a pretty good career for himself so far. So it's really a toss up, and I think what counts most of all for quarterbacks is that pro day.
So the Vikings, we talked about a little bit. Cousins, there's an opportunity. Bridgewater could still be the guy. Keenum could still be the guy. There's so many options there. It just, the Minnesota Vikings, I feel, are as close as they've been maybe since 1998. They had the NFC Championship run, of course, when they had Brett Favre back there, quarterback. We saw him a year ago there. But they're so close. That defense is good. You got Dalvin Cook coming back next season. Two good receivers, an improved offensive line. All the pieces are there. The window closes so tight. If Cousins decides to go somewhere else, are there any other names outside of the ones that are there with Keenum and Bridgewater that would make sense?
I think this is a team that is positioned to win a lot of games without that top flight quarterback, because that just happened, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, it doesn't, not necessarily a bad quarterback per se, but sort of an above average quarterback. And I think if the Cousins if they go hard for him and miss, I think you can fall back to Keenum perhaps. Bridgewater still might not be a free agent too. That's a really interesting and iffy situation with that contract might toll. And then when you go to that sort of second tier, if you're not going to bring back one of the three quarterbacks that are leaving, A.J. McCarron perhaps, there's a lot of sort of grimacing when you mention his name, I feel, but he's a guy who was groomed under Hugh Jackson, had some, you know, decent starts a few years back. And again, I don't think this is a Vikings team that needs that megastar quarterback to really be successful, especially when you mentioned with Dalvin Cook coming back, a guy who I think I had about 400 yards from scrimmage or so over four games last year. So, you know, it's a team that's really going to still be a powerhouse in the NFC. And, obviously having Cousins there would take you that extra notch. It just, do you want to pay that money? And then with the free agents I mentioned earlier, be sort of strapped with them. You have to eventually pay those guys too.
Okay, then take me to Trent's team, the Chicago Bears. They know who their quarterback is going to be, and the guy who was signed to big money last year, Glennon, is going to be released. So I don't think that shocked anybody, particularly with the way Trubisky came on. So now, if they have to have a backup, will they draft a quarterback? Not in the first round, obviously, but would they draft a QB, or would they sign a veteran to be the backup?
If you want to look at a day three safety net kind of guy, perhaps to plug back there, maybe. But I think you build through the draft, and I think what we don't talk about enough in free agency is, there's always the odd exception with, say, a Cousins or et cetera, but for the most part, free agents become free agents for a reason, because they're flawed in some way. You know, their former teams couldn't justify the cap space to keep them around. So what I think you want, if you're the Bears, don't spend big on a free agent. Bring in a guy, really, a Josh McCown. He's 39. Bring him back. Why not? He was fine for he was really good for the Jets, actually. You're not asking him to start a lot of games. Hopefully you're not asking him to start any. But he's a quality veteran. He's established, and he's really, when you think of that bridge quarterback or that safety net quarterback, I think he has made a career out of being that guy. You know, sort of going down the list here of potential guys like that, just you want that sort of steady veteran. Really, he's only the one that comes to mind immediately. But that's a possibility.
So, the Bears, this is a big draft for Ryan Pace, too. There's some talent there. He's brought in some good young talent, but it's still a rebuild in front of him. The importance of this draft for Ryan Pace, he swung at some targets out there. You look at Cohen, you look at the tight end. You know, they went small school with a couple of those different guys. What are the murmurs you're hearing about Ryan Pace? Do the Bears, do they need to have a bounce back this season at least? You know, hover around that 500 mark for him to get another season. He's got his guy in place now at head coach. Is it time to deliver right now for the Bears?
I think it's been that time for. Well, yeah, I think 2018 certainly is. You need to eventually have those blocks that you've put in place, sort of, you know, have that foundation and keep building upwards. I think what lacks on that team, really, and it has been for a few seasons, wide receiver help. I mean, it's the quarterback position gets talked about so much, and rightfully so. But eventually, Trubisky needs more talent around him, and the Kevin White bust from a few years back looms large. I think with this upcoming off season, that should be really the focus. Get just some more, that much more talent around Trubisky. You started to see that last year with Adam Shaheen a bit, and Tariq Cohen was fantastic. Jordan Howard is still a great offensive threat as well. I think that is really sort of the next frontier for the Bears, if you will, and getting that in there would at least make Pace feel a bit more secure and make mm-hmm. the Bears more successful in 2018.
Quickly, the Kansas City Chiefs, are they done buying and selling, or do you still think that the we're open for business sign is still up?
You know, the Chiefs are really the biggest example to me right now in the NFL is how when we talk about a rebuild, it doesn't need to just be going down to nothing, but you can do it so quickly. I think for now they may sort of press pause, but it's been really a quick, startling couple weeks here shipping around guys. But startling just because the big names that have gone around. But when you think about it, obviously we expected Smith to get dealt. Peters, he's had some great seasons, but you just committing to him long term, his value would have never been higher than what it is now. That made a lot of sense too. So. Up and down the roster, I think they're probably, you know, maybe Justin Houston, but I think probably he sticks around too. So, I think they're probably done for now.
Let's go up to Green Bay, the Packers, and read a story earlier today just talking about Aaron Rodgers. He's got an extension that runs through 2019, but Jimmy Garoppolo got paid. Kirk Cousins is going to get paid. He could ask for the moon. Is that the best thing, though, for the Packers, or is it time for Aaron Rodgers, much like we've seen Tom Brady do later in his career, leave some of that money on the table and help the rest of the roster?
Yeah, I think it's difficult to do, but with these quarterback contracts, or really any NFL contract, you got to sometimes think past just the dollar value and think to your own work life almost. Don't you always want to get paid what you're worth. And when you are the best at a very extremely rare skill, as Aaron Rodgers is, he deserves that. And Tom Brady's sort of a unique case because him on a personal level too. I don't know if this is still true, but his wife earns more than he does. So I think yeah, Rodgers needs that. He is as far as average annual salary, he's ranked I believe is sixth right now. After all those contracts you mentioned with Garoppolo, with Stafford, Derek Carr last year even. So the problem is, or at least sort of the tricky part of it, is that, no, he's not old yet, but he's definitely not young either. He'll turn 35 where this offseason, not every quarterback ages like Drew Brees or Tom Brady. He's had a few injuries. So how much can you commit to him into his late 30s and rely on him to keeping healthy? And but then on the other side of that is that realistically the Packers go right now where Aaron Rodgers goes, and we saw that this past season, how quickly that team sort of took a downturn without him.
Sean, it's always good, pal, when you take time with us. We thank you as always. You have a great day.
Hey, it's all right. Thanks, guys.
Sean.
You too.
There you go. Sean Tomlinson, Bleacher Report, the National Football League. God, I'm ready for football right now, Trent, after we just did that interview.
Well, it's February. You got a little time before we get back to football.
Are you a combine guy? Will you pay much attention?
No,
not a combine guy? Okay.
No.
Yeah.
Does nothing for me.
Okay.
How about you?
Because I know some people. Nah, I probably would peek in when the quarterbacks are doing something. You know, if they're throwing, I would probably find that somewhat interesting. But other than that, no, it's not a big deal for me either. It's just that we have this season a unique situation with four or five guys who most likely could go in the first or second round. As quarterbacks, and they're all good name guys right now. So I was just kind of curious if that would be something that I would probably take a peek at. To me, that's really the only story. I don't care about a lineman running or the shuttle drill or Rich Eisen running his 40. At the end of it, but
that's about the only entertaining part for me.
It is fun. Yeah. I mean, look, hey, I like Rich, and I think it's great what he does with that. I think it's awesome, but it's just not must see TV. It's not a game. It's guys for the most part in shorts and a t-shirt, and that's it.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
There'll be storylines that develop, and you mentioned Darnold, not wanting to throw and making that decision. And there's going to be all kinds of, those little stories that pop out from time to time. But overall, just not a huge, huge deal for me. Well, Jim, we got to take a break. We're a ton late here. We'll come back, put a cap on things on the other side as we take you up until 6 o'clock tonight. It's Jimmy B and TC.
Welcome back, everybody, as we get set to wrap everything up here on a Wednesday. All right, Trent, where are you tonight on the boob tube? Is there anything that just kind of, I gotta watch this one for sure?
Well, I'm going to be locked and loaded Minnesota Rutgers, of course, anytime you can get...
I don't think so.
No?
I'm
no,
sorry.
No.
I don't think I'm buying that one. Nope, I'm not buying that one.
Okay, yeah, you're right. Not going to have a whole lot there. Villanova at Seton Hall, maybe?
Yeah.
At least keep an eye on it, at the very least. Late night, Nevada, UNLV. Possibly. That UNLV team, a lot of talent on it. And saw them when they came in earlier this season to Cedar Falls and took on UNI. And Bennett Cook dominated inside what was the big man? McCoy.
McCoy, yes.
That a lot of people feel is going to be a top flight pick in the draft. But... Yeah, maybe that a little bit. You got anything with your crappy NBA? Is there anything compelling tonight?
There is, as a matter of fact. Thank you for opening that up for me. The late game is Houston in Los Angeles against the Clippers, which means Chris Paul returns to the scene of the crime. So that has a little juice on it. And here's one that I find interesting. It is Golden State playing tonight in the nation's capital against the Washington Wizards. Still no John Wall.
Right.
But since Wall has been out, they've only lost, Trent, two games.
Mm-hmm.
They're playing fantastic basketball right now, Washington is. So I am going to sample that against Golden State and see how the Wiz, if they have any luck against the four All-Stars that are in that starting lineup.
Hey, speaking of the NBA, I saw Dallas is playing OKC tonight. Have you checked in at all at McDermott and Barnes playing together?
Yeah, I can't tell you they have been on the court together. Yes, I have seen some of that, some of Dallas's games, and yes, they have been on the court together. In fact, in the win the other night, at the end of the third quarter, McDermott hit a buzzer beater for a big three-pointer, and the place went nuts. So they're getting some pretty good pub. Look, Dallas is a bad team. They've got front office problems that you and I have discussed previously on this show, and they got a lot of things to change. But having Harrison Barnes and Doug McDermott there at least it gives you some sort of base to deal with. And if they can have any success in free agency, and they have Dennis Smith Jr. as well, they could be decent next year. Look, we know the West is loaded. I'm not saying they're going to be a playoff team, but I think that they might be able to rebound a little bit and be competitive most of the season.
Interesting. Interesting. I'll take your word for it. The Dallas Mavericks.
I know you haven't seen it. Yeah.
No, not at the top of my list. Well, we are running short on show, but you don't have to wait until noon to hear my voice tomorrow. No, you can hear it early. I'll be back on the air at 9:45. We got Johnston in the girls' semifinal round against top-seeded, undefeated, number one ranked Iowa City City High. That'll be at 10 o'clock. Then right afterwards, it'll be Indianola against Iowa City West. I'll bring those games for you. Jimmy B and myself will be back tomorrow afternoon from 4 until 5:30 before we leave the airways a bit early. We got you and I basketball Friday. We got the Big Ten tournament rights here. We're excited about that. We got more MVC tournament, hopefully, with the Panthers on Friday as well. But it's a great time of year, Jimmy B. I'm going to enjoy this little time away, though, this evening. A chance to get those vocal cords ready for bright and early tomorrow morning.
There you go, pal. Once again, you're going to be the man who has a plan with high school hoops and then talk shows.
Yes.
You're unstoppable. You're absolutely unstoppable. It's amazing to me the stamina that you as a young man have.
Thank you, New Leaf Wellness. And thank you to everybody out there for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Looking forward to it with the state tournament. Have a good night, everybody.